Welcome to another podcast in our series, Conservation in HD. Today, our podcast is Understanding a Changing America, a Key to Successful Conservation. This podcast series is part of a collaboration with the NCTC Conservation Land Management Branch and the Human Dimensions Branch in Refuges. I'm Natalie Sexton, and today I have the pleasure of having Dr. Steve Murdoch with me. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Nice to be here.
Steve's a sociology professor at Rice University and former director of the U.S. Census Bureau. He's originally from the great state of North Dakota, home of the tater tot hot dish, right, Steve?
The hot dish, yes.
We really want to talk about why we really need to understand a changing America and how really that relates to the conservation work we're trying to do. So why would you say we do need to understand our audiences and some of these changes that are taking place?
Well, I think the major reason is that we're undergoing some very substantial changes in the base population of the United States. And you see it in a number of different ways. For example, in the last decennial period from 2000 to 2010, only 8% of our net growth in our population in the United States was due to non-Hispanic white populations. That meant that 92% of all the growth in the U.S. population, and going forward it looks the same, by the way, was due to minority populations, with the largest percentage, almost 56%, being due to Hispanics. Particularly evident when you looked at children. In the less than 18 category, less than 18 years of age, we actually had a net decline of 4.3 million non-Hispanic white children, offset by an increase of 4.8 million Hispanic children. In fact, had it not been for the growth in the number of Hispanic children, we would have had one of the largest declines in the child population in U.S. history. So these are trends that are very dramatic. When you look at them, they're northeast, they're midwest, they're south, they're west, they're across the United States. And all projections going forward, for a variety of reasons, show that we expect that to continue. In fact, if you look at the data, it's almost nearly impossible now for the non-Hispanic white population to have any significant growth going forward. And U.S. Census Bureau projections and others project a non-Hispanic white population to actually decrease in absolute terms in the coming years.
Wow, those statistics look quite a bit different than what we see in our visitation to refuges, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you begin to look at those data, one particular item that I remember, I think that about 96% of your visitors in the most recent survey were non-Hispanic white. But that's very different than the country in 2000. Well, 2010, we're about 63%. And going forward, when we begin to look at our growth in the future, we expect by 2060, that less than half our population will be non-Hispanic white. So you're seeing a very rapidly changing population base, which means a rapidly changing, I think, set of users and visitors for your entities.
Yeah. Well, you're here this week for our Urban Wildlife Refuge Academy. And as you might be aware, our Urban Wildlife Refuge Initiative was born out of some visioning that Refuges is doing to try to be more relevant, not only in our conservation work and thinking at a more landscape scale and being able to be more efficient and successful, but also trying to be more relevant with this changing American public, some of those statistics that you laid out, and trying to do a better job, particularly in our urban areas where we have refuges or where we don't and we want to have more of an influence. And certainly one of the foundational pieces of that is understanding those audiences that are in close proximity to our refuges and where we're working. And as you've touched on, to be relevant, we have to be thinking about these things. I've heard you equate relevancy to the business world. And how do you think some of these statistics relate to our ensuring relevance in the future?
Well, I think when you look at governmental planning, sometimes, and having been in that sector several times in my life, I think we forget that we are marketing a product, just like Coca-Cola markets a product. And those kind of companies do a great deal of market research. But in more than just the research, they recognize the diversity of America. And they many of these international companies, Walmart would be another, they have people that specialize in particular racial and ethnic groups. And they're very aware. I find them more aware than I find my colleagues. I find them more aware than I find state or most federal government agencies aware of the diversity of groups out there and the diversity of approaches that are necessary in order to get people to buy their product. And although you're not selling a product, use of your product, which is important for your future, is something that also, I think, needs to recognize the diversity within the diversity. For example, one thing that you see is that when we talk about Hispanics, we often fail to differentiate between different origins of Hispanics, so that to equate Puerto Ricans with Mexican Americans, with Cubans, etc., often amalgamates views and perspectives that are not necessarily the same.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of nuances there. What are some other trends that you think it's important for conservation practitioners to understand in order to effectively engage changing audiences?
I think another factor that is there, and it's really interrelated and integrated into some of these other issues we were talking about, is to recognize that with these demographic differences, there are, due to a variety of historical, discriminatory, and other factors, sets of socioeconomic characteristics that will affect the income base, the socioeconomic resources of users of variety of facilities, including things in the public sector as well as the private sector. We know, for example, that poverty rates, for example, for African Americans and Hispanics are 2 to 3 times, depending on the area you're looking at, the poverty rates for non-Hispanic whites. We know their income levels tend to be 60 to 65% of what the incomes are for non-Hispanic whites. So when you begin to look at resource bases and the kind of choices families with reduced resources have to make, I think it's important to understand that you have to have a product that is made available not only to those who used to be able to afford that product, but who now have the resources they have to access your product. So I think behind this, because in many ways we don't, from a purely marketing standpoint, you don't care what people's racial and ethnic characteristics are. The reality of it is what's important about that is that their socioeconomic resources, their levels of education, those sorts of things are impacting what resources they use and can use.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not just about entrance fees for public lands. I think refuges have some of the most affordable public lands, most of them being free, but I know that there's other barriers, transportation, and just having the right skill set to feel comfortable, engaging in some of those activities.
Well, if you look at surveys, for example, done in urban areas of certainly those with the most minimal resource bases, many of them, for example, do not own their own vehicles.
Right.
And accessing many of our refuges in other areas would be very difficult if you had no access to your own vehicle. So it becomes very difficult under those circumstances. So that I think understanding not only the differences that may be there due to different cultural backgrounds, but different socioeconomic backgrounds. Because many of the services we have, without meaning to, actually involve, a kind of middle class or upper middle class, a set of perspectives, a set of resources. And as you get population bases with very different resource bases, very different perspectives, it's critical to start to understand and to, I think, take appropriate actions to make sure that your resources are accessible to as wide an audience of Americans as possible.
Yeah, we certainly found that in the National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Survey that the median income was $75,000 to $99,000, which was well above the median for the U.S. So certainly, traditionally, our visitors to refuges have been not only more, higher income, but higher education levels.
Yeah. Well, for example, if you take that 75, that would have been about 30,000 higher than the median incomes for, in many areas, for African Americans and Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a very substantial difference in the capabilities of someone in those two economic circumstances.
So I know perhaps folks listening are maybe surprised by some of these statistics or perhaps well aware, but wondering what can they do? What are some strategies that they can implement to try to address some of these issues? What would you say to that?
Well, I think that one of the things that we have to recognize is as we reach out to new audiences, it may take measures that have not been necessary in the past. So, for example, we've generally assumed in most kinds of facilities, I think, such as you're talking about, that people would get there on their own. They'd have the resources to travel to the site. That may not be possible. If you really want to get greater access by people in many of the central cities of America, you may have to provide the transportation from a particular location to that area. You're probably going to have to do some educational things to help parents understand why this is important. They have lots of things going on in their lives. They are probably very busy trying to make a living. And their children have lots of different possibilities. You're going to help educate their parents to the importance of this. And then I think to take measures such as those of transportation to ensure that they really can access.
Mm-hmm. And partnerships as well. Partnering with other entities that can help to reach some of those groups that we maybe don't have the experience in connecting with.
And I think it, and often in many cases, I think one should explore as well the possibility of partnering with the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the private sector, in many cases, organizations, for example, that are in recreation, may have a lot of reason to help you in terms of creating greater appreciation of the outdoors, of preserving various kinds of areas and various kinds of species. And I think that good public-private partnerships can work for everybody.
I'd encourage our listeners to look at the standards of excellence that have recently been developed for our urban refuges as part of our initiative, and those can be found at americaswildlife.org. And I think there are several of those that really have a broader application to not just urban refuges, but to other refuges in trying to more effectively connect with a changing America. So let's talk a little bit about some tools that are out there to help practitioners that can help understand audiences.
Well, I think one of the things, and I would say this having been a director of the Census Bureau, is that the Census has a huge amount of data online. They have a very good tool for accessing it. It's called America Fact Finder. If you have access to an internet and a computer with pretty good storage, you can access it. They also have regional offices, and from those regional offices, they have training specialists who will come out to facilities. They won't come out necessarily for a single person, but if you had groups of people that wanted to get trained on how to use American Fact Finder, wanted an overview of their databases, that's exactly what they're there for. And with a little bit of pre-planning, they can help provide those data. And again, I would suggest that you, in many cases, could partner with people in the private sector who could help fund some of that, perhaps, and certainly would be interested in accessing some of the same audiences.
Mm-hmm. And then specific to recreation, we've got two kind of key resources. One is a survey of the U.S., the National Hunting, Fishing, and Wildlife-Related Recreation Survey. And then we also have the National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Survey, which is specific to visitors of refuges. And there's a lot of good information in both of those surveys. And then probably a lot of our listeners by now have become aware of our Human Dimensions broadcast series, which is a live broadcast that's about an hour long on various social science topics. And that's available at distancelearning.fws.gov. And we did two last year, one called Embracing the Cultural Diversity of Visitors and Stakeholders, and one called Engaging with Community Urban Communities. So I would suggest both of those. What about partnering with universities and looking to the literature? Any suggestions there?
Well, certainly there are some very fine programs, as you know, in the human dimensions of wildlife, human dimensions of use of public facilities and public lands. And those programs that are scattered across the country have researchers. You're going to have several at a conference that I'm attending now who can really provide very good insight. And so I'd encourage people to reach out. They're particularly evident in the land-grant universities across the country, which had a connection to all the programs that you're involved in. And they generally have researchers who are, in fact, in many cases, looking for research on key areas and looking to partner with a federal agency. And sometimes they can bring with them connections to private sector groups that also have resources. Mm-hmm. So I certainly would look to the land-grant universities of the country for researchers in these areas.
So, Steve, in closing, with all of your years of experience and research and expertise, what happens if we ignore all of this?
Well, I think the thing that Americans have to realize, and this is not a statement of some kind of philosophy, it's a statement of fact, is that the reality of it is that the future of the United States is tied to its minority populations. And how well they do is how well America is going to do. That's true socioeconomically, and it's true in regard to all of the agencies and entities that depend on the federal government and that serve the people of the United States. It's important to understand that I believe their success will also be dependent on their ability to access the fastest growing in population segments of the U.S. population. So their future as well, I think, is tied to minority populations in the mm-hmm. United States.
I really appreciate your time today, Steve. I'm wondering if other questions come up. Could folks contact
sure,
you?
Sure, they'd be, okay. be glad to have them contact me. My email is SHM for my initials for Steve Harold Murdoch, and just the number 3 at rice.edu. So it's SHM3 at rice, R-I-C-E dot edu.
Okay, thanks, Steve. And you can always contact me as well. I'm at Natalie_Sexton@fws.gov. And I also have an email just for the branch of Human Dimensions. It's human_dimensions@fws.gov. So either of those emails. Well, that wraps up this podcast. Please look for future ones in this podcast series, Conservation in HD. And we'll talk to you next time.